Thank you, my family. My name is Ernie H., also known in my spiritual growth as Khalees Amin, truly a most grateful recovering addict. I want to thank the God of my understanding for having me here tonight. I want to thank the God of your understanding that you're here tonight. I want to thank the newcomers for giving life a chance. I want to thank Northern California to ask me to be a part of their 16th celebration of life. And I want to, for I'm held in awe, I want to ask, rather let me rephrase that, simply, I want to thank God for allowing me to find my way here today. For if you've been abreast of the news out of New York, we've been besieged by 15 storms this winter, not brief snow flurries. Today was the worst. An airplane, in attempting to take off last night, slid off the runway and nearly fell into the bay. They closed the airport. There were gale force winds. There was sleet and driving rain and snow. And I had a connecting flight in Chicago that only allowed 25 minutes. And yet, the plane that we were to have taken was canceled. Here I stand. I'm still in awe how I got here. But I learned in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous that the difficult we'll do right now, the impossible will take a little while. So we did the difficult. I want to thank the committee for having selected me amongst many that could have been chosen to open this convention. I want to take the time that I'm not misunderstood. If I should use some adjectives that are a bit brusque, it's not to be dramatic, it's not to sound profound, it's not for the sake of foul language, but I'm here, 60 years old, 4.5 months, and of that time my disease had me in the grips 40 years, of which 23 was heroin usage, 9 years was methadone, 37 years was alcoholism, and 15 months was crack cocaine. And my disease did not treat me in a gentle fashion. It didn't wake me early on a Sunday morning and say, Ernie, do you think possibly you might get me something? So, lest I forget from whence I came, I must choose the terms that can convey, particularly to the newcomers, and particularly to the old-timers who might feel that somehow they've arrived, that somehow they have a life outside of the fellowship. They've got a split-level garage. I'm talking about a disease that's a dirty motherfucker. I'm talking about a disease that takes no prisoners, just hostages, and sells you to the lowest bidder. I'm talking about a motherfucking disease that always told me it was about the next one. Don't worry about it, Ernie. You can stop any fucking time you want to. as long as it's not now. So I didn't come out here over 3,000 miles to win a Webster's Award on the use of language. But I did come out here to save someone's life and put to lie that foul, funky, low-down belief that our pain is pleasure. First things first, I suffered. And I'm not unique, for you suffered if you're here. I suffered, and 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 I suffered. And it got to where I had to suffer the indignity of having to pay for my pain, for having to be humiliated, being sold soap and smoked them sons of bitches anyway. To go back to the dealer apologetically as though it were my fault. Oh my God, we but give me some palm olives, mate. I make a conscious effort to attempt to share with a bit of humor for its healing, its identification. But should you have laughed at me when any of these incidents happened in my life, God damn it, choose the weapon and how you choose to die. So if there's anybody here tonight that might have a reservation that they possibly might do it again, I hope I'll fuck it up. You hear me? Part of my delivery tonight, my brothers and sisters, will be about my war story. But basically, I'm going to try to share about the forces that drove me to find a way to get outside of me. So I'm going to talk about some feelings. You know, feelings, for me, was that which I didn't want to come to grip with. I wanted to do anything but feel. Anything but feel. And to not feel, by its very definition, meant that I had to get outside of now. So now was a crisis. I didn't want to be in now. I'll stop tomorrow, after a while, pretty soon, in a few minutes, later on, hold the fucking fort. What's the rush? Right now, I got to smoke. Right now, I got to shoot this up. Right now, I'm in a nod. Right now, I'm in pain, but I didn't know it. Man on the radio didn't identify that drug called, that liquid drug, as a drug. This bud's for you, they would tell you blithely. Let's toast to your health. Six o'clock is happy hour time. So I had all the support mechanism out there to buttress this feeling of pain because it carried social acceptability. Pot was told to be non-addictive. So I wanted the Panamanian red and the Chicago light green and the African black gunji. And then every now and then spice it up with a little oregano because I'm going to smoke that too. So the pain that I attempted to deal with, I first came to grips with as a child. That I not be misunderstood, I'm going to touch on some topics that might make certain of us here a bit uncomfortable. But I'm speaking of my recovery, of my expression of that which has sustained me, that which I've transcended to be here. This is my hope that I bring. I'm the last of six boys raised in Detroit, Michigan, that when I grew up, it was about color. Values was placed on color. And since the greater culture, I would often hear remarks, I want to be tall, dark, and handsome. And how do you like my tan? And then they would lay in the sun. And then I would see within my culture, blacks putting on Natanola bleaching cream, trying to get white. Then I saw white folks on the outside putting Tony Home permanents in their hair, trying to make straight hair wavy. And then I saw blacks putting hot fucking fire in their hair, trying to make their tight curls straight. And I was a bit confused. But this fed down into the family structure. So that when you're born in a family of several siblings, the more the siblings, the greater variations you will see in complexion. So kids, being very astute, they picked up very quickly on this color thing. People were rubbing me on the head, applauding me for things that I was least responsible for. You light, bright, damn near white. So I call my brothers black motherfuckers when they'd make me mad. They would call me a half-breed, dollar, etc. And it was very painful because I was a minority within a minority. I wanted to be black. But all the signals said, no, you don't want to be black. If you white, you right. If you brown, stick around. But if you black, step back. So there was pain involved. There was a need to get outside of myself. So the first way I found to get out of myself was to hold my breath and spin in a circle and get dizzy, and I like that feeling. And I like building my own airplane. And pretty soon, fuck the planes, I like to do. And it was always about getting outside of myself. And it was always about casting blame other than where it lied, which was with me. Which is not to let the society off the hook, to allow the family off the hook. But it was always your fault. If you white motherfuckers, if you leave me alone, I'll be all right. But if you black motherfuckers leave me alone, I'll be all right. If the mailman delivers my check, I'll be all right. So as I say, when I share, I get raw. I don't dress up and I don't apologize. But I gotta talk like this. Hear me. I'm talking about a disease that wants to kill us, boy. It don't come with no white on white goddamn shirts and no long shoes. And it sells it to you a bit at a time. It told me to die, but do it in installments.
So if I heard somebody had some heroin that killed 4 or 5 motherfuckers, who got it? I smoke crack to see how close could I come to that border called death. That I knew if I took one more puff, that's the puff that's going to take me on the other side. But my disease said, take that puff, boy. It's going to be all right. And I would take the puff. Suddenly my heart stopped missing beats and tripping. Pressure on my chest. Fall off the bed. I'm on one knee. I'm paranoid. I hide the goddamn stem under a piece of paper. Say the police will never look there if they come in the door. And my disease says, take that puff. Take it. And when I take it and I think I'm going to die, I say, God, please don't let me die, God. God, please, God, don't let me die. I'm going to stop smoking this shit. As soon as my heart gets a rhythm, I say, well, that was too big a rock. But just don't breathe that deep. So my disease was about death. My disease was about pain. My disease was a disease that the symptoms, they put your ass in prison for. They'll put you in prison if you got pneumonia, you sneeze on the summer and give them a cold. They'll put you in jail if you got tuberculosis and you cough in a motherfucker's face. They don't give you a prison sentence and call you a predicate felon because they operated on you twice for cancer and you back the third time. They lock you up if you use. So I used heroin to overdose. I used it to overdose. If I could overdose, I said, that's quality shit, boy. And to overdose means you that close to death. All your vital signs have crashed. Respiration, damn near non-existent. Blood pressure that fell through the floor. Heartbeat tripping and missing. Call the rabbi, call the priest, call somebody. I wanted more of that shit, boy. Do you hear the progression I'm talking about? This disease does not allow a man to use 40 years. If you're out there saying, but damn, man, I'm trying to stop at 22, 25, 30, 18, 17. That man went till he was 53. Well, I don't know how the fuck I made it to 53. I don't know. I didn't try. I tried to kill me. Drink that cheap ass. That cheap wine, that's no grape ass shit called Thunderbird. I drank it to throw up yellow liver bile. It took me to places where I had to tie my shoes around my neck that I would have them when I left in the Bowery. Spraying me like I was some goddamn giant ass bug and shit. I want to remember that, my family. I want to remember dirty ankles. I want to remember having $50 or $60 in my hand, but I could not buy food. Eat a Twinkie, you motherfucker. But you see, that was the bundle I needed. I want to remember that. Because they say, lest we remember, we are doomed to repeat. Not we might repeat, we could repeat, we usually repeat, most likely we're going to repeat, as a fucking rule you're going to repeat, 9 out of goddamn 10 times you're going to repeat, said you are doomed to repeat. So I got to call it like it is. Well, how could I be 60 years old having recently celebrated 6 years when I couldn't put together 6 minutes? Dealers say, wait here, be back in 6 minutes. Fuck you, let me go with you, you ain't got to come back.
So when I came into fellowship, my brothers and sisters, I came in an atheist. And I was an atheist that one of them pseudo-intellectuals, you know, one of them intellectuals that read the New York Times with no jaws on. I could tell you all about the galaxies and outer space and the speed of light, singularities and the Crab Nebula, and all about the electron microscope and the quarks and the neutrinos and all that shit. What the UN should do to make peace. But I didn't know that I couldn't stop using. I didn't know that there was such a thing as I was out of control. I was in control. I like that. You like Drambuie. Fuck Drambuie. Give me some Twister. That was my attitude. So what I'm trying to say is that as my disease progressed, that which I needed to fortify this disease, I looked for. So that if I said I'm a racist, I had to find a reason to hate you. Just the stereotype wasn't enough. So I blocked the subway door. Rush out. I'm standing in the door. White person bump me. Fuck you bump me for racist. Fuck you see me standing here. This is my attitude. I go with quit a job. Rent due, I'm gonna quit. Fuck the job. You need me. I don't need this job. Tell the judge, give me how much time you want. I can do any time you give me. No big shit. Sick. And didn't know I was sick until I stumbled into the rooms at 53 years old. When I say stumbled, I came in the rooms, man. Hopeless, beat down in the mud. I mean, you know, I mean, to be smoking crack at 53, boy, you know what I'm trying to say. You know, if I had given it any consideration, I should have stopped. Just because they named the shit crack, I should have told me something. But I came in that room, like I said, I came in because I heard that there was recovery there. That they could stop me from smoking crack. I still wanted to drink and smoke them woolies and all that crazy shit. I just was out of control with the crack. And I can't sell no more wolf tickets. Tell people I'll kick your ass. Then you're telling me to go down in the, and take off the dealer. Fuck your doozy. So everywhere I turned to stop, I couldn't. The state of New York told me that they had this new drug out in the late 60s, early 70s called methadone, and that they would be able to stabilize me, that they could maintain me. It was going to be legal, and they were going to give it to me for the rest of my life, and that as a side benefit, it would allow me to dig in my ass and pull on my nose, nod and scratch. I'm an addict. Where do I sign? That didn't work. Going in and out of jail didn't work. I didn't do no long time. I did them chump bits on Hart's Island digging some fucking grave for the unfortunates that didn't have a name. I went in and out of Rikers Island for chump change, 60, 90 days. But I was the master prisoner. Boy, I was a warden that was a heartless, cruel son of a bitch.
I mean, in jail, they do allow you to see the doctor. I had walking pneumonia. In jail, they take your name, but they give you a number across your chest. I had no name. I didn't even know who I was. If they want to punish you in jail, they separate you and segregate you and put you in isolation for 15, 20 days. They deal with that. But I isolated for 40 years. In jail, they give you 3 hots and a cot. I lived in an abandoned fucking aluminium. Slept on the A train with the police beating the bottom of the soles of my feet to make me get up because the paying customer is going to work in the morning. And in all that pain, I didn't know that I was suffering. I thought, you know, that goes with the territory. You know, what am I complaining about? So I came in the room with my family on February the 11th of 1988, in a year similar to the one we're experiencing in New York this year. The temperature was in the single digits many days that winter. And I came in that meeting and I saw something that I never recovered from. And I'm glad that I never recovered from it, because what I saw was the seed that blossomed. You know, the Chinese have a proverb that says that though you may count the seeds in an apple, you will never be able to count the apples in a seed. And the seed was planted in that meeting because it was an anniversary, and I saw addicts hugging each other and kissing each other on the cheek. And I saw money going down the aisle in a basket, and people were putting money in. And it was quiet. And people were crying tears of joy. And people were applauding when somebody said they had one day clean, the pandemonium broke loose. And I knew I had found what I had been looking for in 72 attempts at getting my life together. And I get this number not out the air, through the help of the state of New York and the hospitals. That's how many times my fucking ass tried to stop. Because though I used 40 years and didn't use every day, but I wanted to use every day. And the pleasure left long, 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 long time ago. I wasn't using to get high. I was using not to be sick. And if I wasn't sick, I said, that's high. So I asked the God of my understanding last night as I hung up the phone talking to the chair here about if I could make it. I told him, I says, you know, Teferi, if I make it, it's because God wants me to be there. And self-centeredness being the core of my disease, before I would have been freaked out. I would have wanted to ask the weatherman, wait a minute, is it any possibility the fucking wind can change direction? Blow this shit out to sea. I must get there. What do you mean calm? Be calm, you'll get there if you get there. These were some of the gifts that were given to me these last 6 years. On reflection, that you may wonder, well, what has happened, particularly to those ladies and gentlemen that raised their hand and said they only had several days here. What happened in my life that made this dramatic turnabout, a 180? Not a 360, I ain't back where the fuck I started. A 180.
It was the first step that told me that I was powerless. Not helpless, not hopeless, not useless, not worthless, but I had less power than my obsession and compulsion to use. Not to get high, not to nod, not to fantasize, not to glamorize, not to romanticize and act like it was fun and fucking games, but to use. That no matter what I said, no matter what promises I made, I took them back. They were hollow. They were a bag of shells. And when I found out that I had a disease that was twofold, that due to this powerlessness, my life was unmanageable. That it wasn't white folks' fault. And if it was, what did that have to do with me? And my recovery began in increments. There was no grand thing. I didn't suddenly find God. Somebody didn't come touch me on the head and say, "You saved." I didn't start talking in tongues and shit. But when I saw addicts saying that they didn't use, what do you mean you didn't use? You didn't pick up? Is there a panic in the street? You ain't got no money? Is it martial law declared? What the hell do you mean you didn't use today? And they said, because we've accepted that we lost all the battles, but in order to win the war, I must surrender. I must throw up the flag and deal with life one day at a time. I often like to share about one day at a time. Bear with me, I've got there's a time lapse here in my mind's eye. New York right now, it's 11:30, so my mind is telling me, what the fuck are you standing up there for? How come you ain't looking at Jay Leno or some shit? But right now, it's 8:37 p.m. Thursday, March the 3rd. But if you pick up a telephone in this hotel and call, let's say, China, and ask the operator there, would you tell me the time? She'd say, sir, it's 8:37 a.m. Friday, March the 4th. So you'd be talking to her tomorrow, she'd be answering you yesterday, but the conversation is taking place now. Well, you know how they say, it's the simple that's profound. They say, keep it in the now. That's how I was able to do the first step. They said, today is the tomorrow you talked about yesterday, and it's still now. Don't pick it up now, and you will have no drug-related problems. And I said, wait, don't pick it up. There's got to be something else besides that. I've been using 40 years. They said, well, make 90 meetings in 90 days. I said, well, does that include the weekend? I mean, wait a minute. I have a disease that looks for the excuse. Not the reason, because there is no reason for me to repeat any of that insanity, but there's a billion excuses. I hit the number, I missed the fucking number. Somebody was born, somebody died. It's raining, the sun is shining. It's winter, it's summer. Let's get high. When it was a high cost of low living, what I experienced. So when I heard that first step repeated over and over and over and over as I kept coming back, the first thought was maybe these people are some kind of cult.
I mean, why do you keep reading these fucking same preambles? I ain't retarded. You don't have to keep reading this shit. They say, well, unless we repeat it, you gonna forget it. I said, what do you mean I'm gonna forget? They say you forgot your last ass whipping. The one that beat you down in the mud. The one that you begged the charge nurse, please let me in the hospital, nurse. She said, well, I'm sorry, you gotta come back Monday. We don't have no bed. Nurse, you gotta let me in. I'll sleep in the slot thing. Nurse, please. And God, somebody signs out the hospital. And the nurse said, I don't know what happened, but there's a bed. And what happened? I get in the hospital. Monday come around. Charge nurse come on the ward, and I say, well, no salt on the fucking potatoes this morning. Give me my papers. Let me get out of here. They forgot that quick. They said, we got to keep reading these cards, because if we read them long enough, you're going to hear something this time that you didn't hear the time before. And it worked. I can't tell you when it worked, but there was a morning I woke up and my committee up here had kind of muffled their voices. You know that committee that say, you outvoted, motherfucker, 5-1, let's get high. Y'all told me I had the power of veto. Exercise it. Told me every time I exercised my veto, I got stronger and the compulsion got weaker. Every time it overrode my veto, I got weaker and the compulsion got stronger. And I found out the connection that I had missed all those years. Because I tried to stop, as I've said, many times. You ever put crack in the drawer? Say, this is for tomorrow. 1 minute after midnight, tomorrow, boy. Self-control? Take some X-Lax and tell you got self-control. So I was always under this illusion that I had fooled myself, that I was in control, I really wasn't suffering, and that y'all was the problem. So the second step told me that I had to consider, that's the word, in the step, I had to consider the possibility, that's all, that there was a power greater than me that could restore me to sanity. Now, to restore implies I must have been sane at some time, or how the hell am I going to get back something I ain't never had? And to be sane means you don't repeat the behavior that fucks you up and you do it again. And I always believed that when I banged my head against the wall and blood was all over the fucking wall, I would compliment the shade of red that was a little pink today. Not that it was my head that I had banged on the wall. Tag the wall, don't worry about me banging my head. Let me shoot it up in my left arm this week. Do you hear the insanity that I was in? So I had to have a power greater than me, an atheist who did not believe that he did not believe. But I believed when I saw the police, boy. God, don't let that man bust me. It's some good shit I got in my pocket. I believed when I went before the judge, God, don't let this judge give me no time. You know I can't do it, God. Simple. Who is
a power greater than me, and I'm an atheist when I came around. It was an addict sitting next to me. The last person on the planet Earth that I thought had any kind of ability to help me. This is the son of a bitch that's the prostitute, that's the pimp, that's the murderer, that, you name it. Like me, I stole your money and helped you look for it. You look under the couch, man. You check all your pockets. This is the person that said true identification is without parallel. That's the therapeutic value. This is the addict that was in that meeting on that Wednesday night that said, I identify. And they were celebrating. And I came in, dirty ankles, skinny, funky, hiding in the back, scared, desperate, feeling unworthy, self-loathing ran deep in my spirit. Wanting to die and afraid to jump in front of the A-train. Cursing dawn because it meant I had to do it again. Third step said that I had to turn it over. I had to become as a child again. I had to believe in the power of believing. Often share, to me, that belief was when I was a kid, you know, and you believe in the tooth fairy and the fairy godmother and the Easter bunny and you take sand and build castles and you make mud ties and taste the sons of bitches. And you believe. You get an old broomstick and you ride that sucker and that's your horse, giddy up, giddy fucking up. And you believe. And you jump when your father, your brother, your uncle, whomever tells you to jump off the stairs, you jump in the belief that he's going to catch you, because if he don't, you're going to bust your fucking ass. And you don't doubt. And y'all said, I must carry that faith. That no matter what, I can't use. No matter what the verdict comes out, I can't use. No matter what befalls me in my life, I cannot use. I no longer have that option. It's not viable. No matter what I'm going through, to use makes a bad situation worse. It's my old orangutan. Anybody ever heard me speak of my orangutan? That's this little motherfucker. He started out as a 2-pound-ass rhesus monkey sitting on my shoulder, whispering in my ear. And after 40 years, he grew into this orangutan. Some push-ups on my ass, telling me to get the fuck up out the bed, sell the bed, sell the door, sell your ass, get in these fucking mouths. He was a terrible general, boy. He made me march to his fucking orders. But with y'all's help, 73 months ago, locked him up in the cage. Y'all told me to leave the key in the rooms. Every now and then he gets to talking to me. Hey, man, Ernie, man, how you locked me in here 6 years and we ran together for 40. Open that door and let's talk about this guy. Tell him thanks for sharing. Because this program has given a man that was in slavery, that makes the slavery of 1619 pale into insignificance. What the fuck I did to me? For to the slave master, he treated the slave because the slave was value. He was a commodity. He had worth. He may not have had respect.
He may not have had dignity, but he was worth money. I wasn't worth shit, goddammit. I put shit in me, I didn't know what the fuck was on the bag. Didn't give a shit. If it foamed up in the cooker and bubbled up and blew up, I added more water. I had to shoot it in me. So I found freedom. I found freedom. Wasn't free, but born one day at a time, it got sweeter than honey from the honeycomb. I'm talking about free. You ever see me? I salivate the words. I'm talking about free. You know what I'm talking about? Woo! I'm talking about free. Walk down the streets, man, and I'm not on a mission. I was the main speaker that's going to share here, I believe, Saturday night. We're on the plane together and we're chatting. Adrian. And I told Adrian, I said, you know, we just left where the snow and the ice and the wind dripped, blew 5 feet high snow. I said, you know, if I was out there and I dropped a rock of crack in that, I would sweep the streets, boy. God is good. All the time. All the time. All the time. Save me from me. Put y'all in my life. I see color, but I'm colorblind. How you like that? That's a miracle. Ta-da-da. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fourth step told me that I had to take a look at me. It begins with me and it ends with me. Told me put the focus on you, I'm in relapse. Put the focus on me and I'm in recovery. I had to see that I was the co-conspirator. I volunteered to be first in line when they passed out the poison. And until I was able to see my role in my destruction, I was lost. I was the ship at sea without a rudder. I was desperate. And kind of wrapping this up and bringing ends together, there's another time I may get the opportunity to speak on the steps. I like to speak in the steps, all 12 in progression. The 12th step, having had, that's in the past tense. I'm not talking about what's going to happen, what is happening. This is something that has, a transfiguration has taken place. Having had a spiritual awakening. Because I was dead. I was asleep. I was out of it. Having had a spiritual awakening due to what? How did I get the awakening? As a result of the steps. So there's no mystery how it happened. I mean, didn't no fairy godmother come and touch my ass on the head? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I tried. That's all. I tried to come out here and carry a message of recovery and of hope. The promise of freedom. Why? Because I'm an addict. I'm subject to tell myself I can do it one more time. My ass is on a little crooked, but I'll learn a new way to sit. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We try to carry the message, and that conjunction and, you know they say in English, and is a connector that brings together two independent clauses that could stand on their own. And practice. You think you had it right? You got no fucking degree. PhD, IMG, that's the fuck you got. And practice these principles before personality. Ain't about you. In what? In all my affairs. And my life is not sweet, y'all. If I was to hear that I had won the $80 million New York Lotto sweepstakes, and there was but one condition to getting all the money without having to wait the 20 years. In fact, they would even pay the taxes so that I could have it all. And the condition would be that I must resume my disease where I left it off February the 11th, 1988. Then I got the wrong ticket. I got a losing ticket. I got a ticket that's going to kill my fucking ass. Only reason I didn't die before, I didn't have enough money. So we are blessed to be here. I'm blessed that y'all pooled y'all's money and flew me out here. I'm blessed that I've been able to carry a message of hope. And that's the greatest gift that the God of my understanding has given me, to be a servant, to have that which Donald Trump came by. The Supreme Court can't find our recovery unconstitutional. The thief can't come in the night and steal it. The moths can't consume it. The fire can't destroy it. It never goes out of style. Yet the only way I can keep it is to share it. And my cup overflows. In closing, I think of a story that I heard, so I don't stand up here and seek to gather these pearls of wisdom and act as though they were mine. I pass them on and give you license to pass them on. The story of a snake. Now, a snake is a reptile that's cold-blooded, and therefore, when the seasons change and it gets winter, it must go underground, hibernate through till the first warmth of spring. This story says that this particular snake was caught in the first frost, early frost, and he was dying. And a man happened by on a horse, riding through the woods, saw the snake, and his heart went out. He got off the horse, and he stooped, and he picked the snake up, all limp, and put him in a bag, and took him back to his cabin, and laying him out in front of his fireplace, got him warm, and he started twisting. And he said, "You look a little peaked," so he got some big fat goose eggs and he fed them. He started coiling. He said, "But you look a little stiff," so he got some mazola oil out and he rubbed them down. And the old snake wound around his neck and down his back and his arms, and the story say they became fast friends that winter.
Well, the first warm day of spring, with heart heavy laden and tears in his eyes locking under his chin, he knew he had to free this snake. It was a day that he didn't want to see. They were buddies. But the snake deserved that. So he took the snake to the very tree that he found him, and in releasing the snake, he said, "Now be cool, baby. When the frost comes, they'll show you underground. May not be fortunate to be saved next fall." And with that, he put his foot in the stirrup to get up on the horse, and the story said that the snake reached up and bit his ass. And as he fell off the horse, his head fell by the snake, and looking the snake in the eye, he said, "Snake, snake, why you kill me, snake? Snake, why you take my life, snake? I saved your life, snake. I nursed you to health. I returned you to where I found you, hoping you find your family here. Why you do this to me, snake? Why you kill me?" Say the snake looked him in the eye, chuckled, and said, "But mister, you knew I was a snake when you picked me up." Know your disease. Don't damn the snake. That's its nature. Ask yourself, why did you pick it up? The proper question to the snake should have been, "The fuck it take you so long to bite my ass?" If you don't pick it up, you can't get high. Make a meeting. Learn to talk about what it is, good, bad, or indifferent. God is good. My name is Ernie Kalis. Thanks for letting me share.